Today is Tuesday, January the 14th, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Study finds Israeli bullets and bombs likely killed over 60,000 Palestinians in Gaza. Andre Damon, January the 13th, 2025. A landmark study by researchers from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, published in The Lancet last week, has estimated that the official death toll of the Gaza genocide understated the number of people killed by Israeli attacks by 41% between October 2023 and June 2024. According to official figures from Gaza's Ministry of Health, over 46,000 people have been killed by Israeli bullets and bombs since the start of the genocide in October 2023. If the new study's findings of a higher death rate hold through the present, it would mean that the number of people killed by Israeli forces since October 2023 stands at over 64,000, or 2.9% of the pre-war population of Gaza. Billions of people around the world have been rightfully shocked by the Los Angeles wildfires, which have destroyed over 12,000 homes, businesses, schools and other structures, and led to 24 deaths, in what California's Governor Gavin Newsom said would be the worst natural disaster in U.S. history by cost. But the death toll of the Gaza genocide is thousands of times greater in a tiny and besieged enclave, not one of the world's wealthiest cities, and by deliberate human, or rather inhuman, action. The study found that 59% of victims were women, children or those over 65 years old. These findings reaffirm the undeniable fact that the systematic massacre of the people of Gaza by the Israel Defense Forces, the IDF, with the support and assistance of the United States and other imperialist powers, is a genocide. But even this horrific death toll exposed by the London School of Hygiene study is a significant underestimation in multiple respects. First, as the authors make clear, the survey is designed to exclude those who are still buried under the rubble and presumed dead, a figure estimated by the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, the OCHA, at approximately 10,000. The study likewise excludes the impact of starvation, dehydration, and the spread of infectious diseases promoted by the deliberate efforts of the Israeli government to withhold food from the Gaza Strip and to systematically destroy its hospitals. The study published last week used an extremely detailed and granular statistical method to estimate the death toll. The study combined data from three sources: Ministry of Health hospital death records, an online survey conducted by the ministry, and social media obituaries. A method known as capture-recapture analysis was used to identify overlaps and gaps among the data sets, which allowed researchers to account for deaths not recorded by any single source. Missing data was addressed through statistical modeling, and various scenarios were tested to improve accuracy. No study of similar granularity or rigor has been undertaken to estimate the overall death toll, including deaths from hunger and communicable diseases, and such a study may not even be possible. As the study's authors explain, quote, "Although a ground survey could yield robust estimates, the highly unsafe conditions for humanitarian and health workers inside Gaza and access constraints currently make it unfeasible," end of quote. In July, an article published in The Lancet estimated, based on the impact of previous wars, that the number of deaths tied to the genocide could reach 186,000 or more. It is entirely possible that, given the major underestimation of violent deaths revealed by the most recent study, the earlier figure of 186,000 deaths from all causes could itself be a major underestimate. The official position of the Biden administration is that the death toll in Gaza is a byproduct of Israel's war against an armed resistance group. The latest study underscores, however, that the death toll is the product of a deliberate campaign to kill as many civilians as possible in order to break the resistance of the Palestinian people to the illegal Israeli occupation of Gaza. It is not a war against an armed group, but a genocide against the entire population. Last month, the New York Times reported the existence of official Israeli military documents authorizing the killing of 20 non-combatants in every attack on a single presumed Hamas supporter, with the ratio in some cases reaching 100 to 1. Quote, in each strike, the order said, officers had the authority to risk killing up to 20 civilians, the Times wrote. The Times account made clear that the, quote, system for targeting suspected Hamas sympathisers was nothing more than a cover for a blanket bombardment of Gaza with blockbuster bombs, aimed at killing as many people and destroying as much of Gaza as possible. Earlier in December, Amnesty International published an exhaustive 296-page report documenting that, quote, only an intent to destroy the Palestinians in Gaza can explain the scale and scope of the mass murder, forcible displacement and deliberate starvation of the Palestinians in Gaza by Israel. On November 27, the International Criminal Court, the ICC, issued arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, accusing the two men of, quote, the war crime of starvation as a method of warfare and the crimes against humanity of murder, persecution and other inhumane acts, end of quote. On Monday, in the final speech on foreign policy of his presidency, US President Joe Biden gloated that, quote, Israel did plenty of damage to Iran and its proxies, and that as far as the United States was concerned, quote, our actions contributed significantly. Summarizing the legacy of his presidency, Biden declared, quote, we have increased America's power in every dimension, adding, we've increased our military power. He concluded, our sources of national power are far stronger than when we took office, end of quote. In a call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over the weekend, Biden boasted of, quote, the fundamentally changed regional circumstances throughout the Middle East, the fall of the Assad regime in Syria and the weakening of Iran's power in the region, end of quote. The Gaza genocide is an essential component of the US drive to increase American imperialism's power in the Middle East. The Biden administration has pursued the final solution of the Palestinian question, the drive to totally break the resistance of the Palestinian people in an effort to create what Bush administration National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice christened, quote, the new Middle East, a term repeatedly used by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to describe the goal of the massive regional war he's waging on behalf of the imperialist powers. In just 6 days, US President Donald Trump will take office. In a press conference last week, Trump pledged that, quote, all hell will break loose in the Middle East unless Hamas surrenders to Israel's demands. Vice President J.D. Vance pledged to enable, quote, the Israelis to knock out the final couple of battalions of Hamas and their leadership, end of quote. Israeli Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich has responded to the election of Trump by ordering preparations for the annexation of the West Bank, threatening to make the West Bank look like Gaza. All factions of the American political establishment, from the blood-drenched Biden administration to Trump and his band of fascists, are committed to normalizing genocide and neo-colonial annexation. They see the ongoing massacre of the Palestinians not as an exception, never to be repeated, but as the model to be applied to all rebellious populations, whether at home or abroad. As Trump prepares to take office, the struggle against the Gaza genocide must be redoubled and transformed into a fight against a capitalist social order, of which the slaughter in Palestine is only one horrific manifestation. Republicans threatened to withhold federal support to Californians devastated by still-raging infernos. Jacob Cross, Mark Wells, January the 13th, 2025. The WSWS asked all our readers in the Los Angeles area to write to us or comment below the written report their experiences with the fires. As climate change-powered fires continue to rage in and around the greater Los Angeles area, with at least 24 reported dead so far, leading congressional Republicans signaled their intent to condition federal aid to California due to alleged, quote, mismanagement by state and local officials. As he was walking through the Capitol in Washington on Monday, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson was asked by CNN, Manu Raju if he was, quote, open to providing federal aid to California, quote, without any conditions. Johnson replied that there needed to be a, quote, serious conversation about that, end of quote. Quote, obviously there has been water resource mismanagement, forest management mistakes, all sorts of problems, and it does come to leadership. And it appears to us that state and local leaders were derelict in their duty in many respects, so that is something that has to be factored in, end of quote. Johnson continued, quote, I think there should be conditions on that aid. That's my personal view. We'll see what the consensus is. Adding, it will be part of the discussion for sure, end of quote. Despite the ongoing danger and the high likelihood that the damage and death toll will continue to rise, Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville, a staunch ally of President-elect Donald Trump, similarly voiced his support for withholding federal support to devastated residents because voters of that state had elected Democrats. Asked by Newsmax's Chris Salcedo, quote, why should other states be bailing out California for choosing the wrong people to run their state? Tuberville replied, we shouldn't be. The former college football coach acknowledged that while there were, quote, a lot of Republicans in California, but, quote, they are just overwhelmed by these inner-city woke policies with the people that vote for them. And I don't mind sending them some money, but unless they show they are going to change their ways and get back to building dams and storing water, doing the maintenance with the brush and the trees and everything everybody else does in the country, and they refuse to do it, Tuberville concluded, they don't deserve anything, to be honest with you, unless they show us they are going to make some changes, end of quote. Tuberville and Johnson's threats to withhold federal aid echo previous threats levied by Trump against California Democrats, specifically Governor Gavin Newsom. While campaigning in California last September, Trump threatened not to give Newsom, quote, money to put out all his fires if Newsom did not agree to divert more water towards agricultural interests, end of quote. While a return of Trump and his cabinet of billionaires to the White House will mark a further erosion of federal funding efforts to combat wildfires and other climate-related catastrophes, under the Democrats as well as Republicans, money to prevent wildfires has continued to be slashed. In a January 11 article on the lack of preparation for the Los Angeles fires, the Washington Post noted federal efforts to clear vegetation and conduct controlled burns is, quote, expensive and at the federal level is underfunded. In 2022, the Biden administration announced a plan to, quote, reduce the fire risk on 50 million acres of land, an effort it estimated would cost around $50 billion, but it was only partially funded with $3 billion from the 2021 Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, end of quote. While there's, quote, no money to reduce wildfire risks, on Monday, President Biden announced that the next two nuclear-powered aircraft carriers to be built, at the cost of roughly $15 billion apiece, would be named for former Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. As of this writing, over 12,300 structures, the majority family homes, have been destroyed in the fires. A recent analysis from Wells Fargo Securities estimated that insured losses were at least $30 billion, with the vast majority of that, some 85%, estimated to be claims for home losses. AccuWeather estimates that the total cost of the firestorm from damage and economic losses will top $150 billion, making it the most destructive in U.S. history. Both the Palisades Fire, currently west of Santa Monica and Brentwood, and the Eaton Fire, north of Pasadena, have yet to be contained. The Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, CAL FIRE, estimated that the Palisades Fire had burnt nearly 24,000 acres and is only 14% contained, while the smaller Eaton Fire has burnt over 14,000 acres and is 33% contained. The smallest major fire, the Hearst Fire, is currently 95% contained. Some 150,000 people are still under evacuation orders. Many are living with extended family members, while others are in public shelters, unable to return home due either to the ongoing danger or the fact that there is nothing left to return to. The National Weather Service, the NWS Los Angeles office, warned that the, quote, extreme fire danger will continue through Wednesday. The agency issued its highest level red flag warning between Tuesday 4 a.m. and 12 p.m. Wednesday for parts of Ventura and Los Angeles counties. The NWS warned that San Fernando, Thousand Oaks, Simi Valley, and other residential areas northwest of Los Angeles could experience wind gusts between 45 to 75 miles an hour, that is 72 to 120 kilometers per hour, between that time. NWS Los Angeles wrote, quote, "Warnings are for the extreme of the extreme fire scenarios. In other words, this setup is about as bad as it gets. Stay aware of your surroundings. Be prepared to evacuate." End of quote. Over 14,000 firefighters, including contingents from Mexico, Canada, and Ukraine, are currently battling the infernos. Of the 14,000 firefighters, roughly 1,000 are incarcerated inmates who are paid as little as $5.80 a day plus $1 per hour when responding to fires. While many workers, middle-class families, and even some celebrities have seen their homes and properties go up in smoke in the last week, the wealthiest citizens of Los Angeles have used their largesse to protect themselves and their assets. Speaking to the New York Times, billionaire former Los Angeles mayoral candidate Rick Caruso confirmed he had hired private firefighters to protect Palisades Village, a mall owned by the developer. Caruso got his start in property development and speculation with the help of his father, Henry Caruso, a rental car magnate. Quote, "Our property is standing," Caruso told the paper. Quote, "Everything around us is gone. It is like a war zone." End of quote. The Times observed that Caruso's properties appeared, quote, "largely intact," while on the other side of the street where houses once stood was now, quote, "ash and rubble." A spokesperson for a private firefighting company told the Times a two-person crew with a small vehicle can cost, quote, $3,000 a day, while larger crews of up to 20 go for as much as $10,000 a day. While private firefighters protected shopping malls, Stephanie, a resident of Altadena, told WSWS reporters in an interview this past weekend that many residents have, quote, "nothing left." She recalls seeing the fire approaching from inside her apartment. Quote, "There was an elderly resident. People were evacuated, but I didn't really hear anything concretely. One woman wanted to stay. All of a sudden the power went out. Then the internet went out. And so we were left there sort of without services. The management of this building disappeared." End of quote. Stephanie said that she was able to call the sheriff to assist her evacuate residents from the apartment building. Quote, "I took the elderly person down the stairwell and we removed what belongings we could. We were like the last, almost residents, it felt like, of Altadena. We could see the flames encroaching and spreading very quickly, heading westward and south, ember by ember through the trees." Quote, "A lot of residents don't know whether they want to rebuild," she continued. "What's left? There's no infrastructure. The local supermarket, there's only one bus line. Everything, the businesses are gone." She noted that, quote, "my building, if you look out the window, you see nothing but bleak, harsh earth, like a moonscape, and rubble of houses, and it is depressing. I don't know, a lot of people may not want to rebuild." End of quote. Valerie, a lifelong resident of Altadena and student at the University of Southern California, told the WSWS that her family was among the last to evacuate her neighborhood. Quote, "We were told to evacuate around 5 a.m. that Wednesday," she said, adding, "currently they're not letting us back in and we would like to go back to get medication. It is already hard in this world, and then knowing that everyone has to start all over, it is really scary. But thankfully there's a lot of help around, like at every block there's donations." End of quote. As of this writing, no official cause for the Eaton fire has been provided. On Monday, the Los Angeles Times and other outlets reported that four lawsuits had been filed Monday by homeowners in the Altadena area. Each of the lawsuits accuses utility company Southern California Edison, SCE, of starting the fire by failing to de-energize its power lines over the Eaton Canyon. Ali Moghadas, an attorney with Edelson, PC, told the Times the utility companies, quote, were on notice of the significant wind events that were coming in that week and chose not to use the tools at their disposal, end of quote. Gerald Singleton, a lawyer with Singleton Schreiber, who is also suing SCE on behalf of homeowners, concurred with Moghadas. Quote, "Everything we've seen points to Edison's power lines being the cause," he told the Times. In several interviews published by Los Angeles Times in January the 12th, many residents testified that they saw the fire begin at the base of the transmission tower located in the Eaton Canyon in the early evening. Marcus Errico told the Times he spotted the fire as he was pulling into his driveway shortly after 6 p.m. last Tuesday. Quote, "At first it didn't click," he told the paper. "Then I realised it was a fire and that there was at this point just a small ring of flames around the base of one of the electrical towers," end of quote. This would hardly be the first time a for-profit energy company's ageing and poorly maintained infrastructure would be responsible for starting a fire. In Northern California, Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E, equipment has been linked to nearly 2,000 fires between 2014 and 2018, including the Camp Fire, still currently the deadliest wildfire in California's history. The same investigation found that in 2015, SCE equipment was involved in 107 fires. In 2016, SCE reported another 95 fires. A separate investigation from the Sacramento Bee found that SCE equipment ignited 347 fires between 2014 and 2017. Equipment maintained by San Diego Gas and Electric, the third major utility company in California, was responsible for 110 fires over that same three-year period. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.